eKatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of eKatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We take these big, complex ideas, look at the sources, and try to break them down fast. Today, it's a big one. We're looking at a manufacturing revolution, but not steel and heat this time. It's biology.
That's right. Biofabrication. It's this really fascinating mix of biology, engineering, computer science, all coming together. The sources we dove into, they paint this picture of a huge shift, like potentially as big as the Industrial Revolution, but based on life itself.
Right. So our goal today, our mission, is to get a quick handle on this shift. What does it actually mean? And crucially, what are the impacts? Medicine, sustainability.
Ooh.
Seems like it touches everything.
It really does. Yeah. And the core argument, the big leap you mentioned, is moving away from how we usually make things, you know, digging stuff up, machining it, putting it together.
Extraction and assembly.
Exactly. Moving from that to cultivation, growing what we need.
Growing things.
Yeah. It sounds a bit sci-fi, but the core idea is, well, it's that the best factory we know is the living cell. Super efficient, sustainable, self-repairing sometimes. Biofabrication is basically about learning to work with that cellular factory, programming it, partnering with it.
Okay, let's unpack this. So let's start with the why. What's wrong with how we do things now? Our industrial age, it's mostly subtractive, right?
Yeah, mostly. We take a block of something and carve away what we don't want, or we melt things down, pour them into molds, high heat, lots of pressure.
And lots of waste. Energy intensive, too. Shipping parts all over the globe.
Precisely. It's often inefficient, can be polluting. We're sort of fighting nature, forcing materials into shapes.
So the shift is stop fighting, start collaborating.
That's the philosophical heart of it, yeah. Build like nature. That means thinking bottom up.
Yeah.
Self-assembly. Instead of top-down brute force, it's not just about being greener, though that's huge. It's also about making things locally. On demand, maybe cutting out those massive, complex supply chains.
Moving from exploitation to cultivation. I like that framing.
It captures the essence, I think.
Now, a big idea like this needs someone to champion it, right? To bridge the science and the vision. The sources talk a lot about Dr. Eris Thorne.
Yes, she's presented as a key figure, fictional, but represents the kind of minds driving this. Her background is perfect for it. Dual PhDs, material science from MIT, molecular biology from Stanford.
Wow. So she speaks both languages.
Yeah.
Engineering and life sciences.
Yeah, exactly. That's crucial. She understands the nuts and bolts of materials, but also the intricate dance of cells.
And she literally wrote the book on it. Principles of Cellular Scaffolding.
That's the seminal work mentioned, yeah. It shows she's not just talking philosophy. She's figuring out the how, the practical steps, the foundational science needed to make biofabrication work. It's that bridge between the big idea and the lab bench.
Okay, so if we want to understand how this works, we need the toolkit. The sources use this great analogy, life's Legos. What are the actual building blocks here?
It starts at the cell itself. Yeah. The sources say don't just picture a blob. Think of it as a tiny, programmable, well, a micro robot.
A tiny robot.
Okay.
And inside, you've got proteins. Those are the nanomachines doing specific jobs. And the DNA, that's the software, the source code running the whole show.
I love that. Makes it click. So the ribosome is like a 3D printer inside the cell.
Reading the instructions?
From messenger RNA, which is like the USB drive carrying the blueprint. Molecular manufacturing.
Precisely. But, you know, having cells in code isn't enough if you want to build something complex like tissue or an organ. You can't just throw cells in a dish.
Latest guidance.
Yeah.
Structure.
Exactly. Which brings us to scaffolding. This is absolutely critical.
Okay, scaffold. In our bodies, that's the extracellular matrix, the ECM, right? The stuff between the cells.
Yes, the ECM. It's this incredibly complex mesh of proteins and molecules. It's not just passive filler. It's like the communication network and the physical support. It tells cells where to go, what to connect to, even what type of cell to become.
So it's the architect and the construction manager for tissues.
That's a great way to put it. So in biofabrication, a huge part of the challenge is creating artificial scaffolds using materials like collagen, maybe alginate, things cells recognize.
And these artificial scaffolds have to mimic the natural ECM.
As closely as possible. They need the right shape, the right stiffness, maybe even embedded chemical cues to guide trillions of cells into forming, say, a piece of bone or cartilage correctly. It's the architectural plan they follow.
Okay, so we have the cells, the workers, the DNA, the instructions, and the scaffold, the blueprint site.
Yeah.
How do we actually build? What are the main techniques?
Yeah.
The sources mention a technical trio.
Right. The first one is probably the best known, 3D bioprinting. This is more of a top-down approach.
Like regular 3D printing, but with living stuff.
Pretty much. You use what they call bioinks, which sounds fancy, but it's basically living cells suspended in a hydrogel, like a jello consistency almost.
Yeah.
And you extrude this bioink layer by tiny layer, following a digital model, building up the structure.
What can we print like this?
Simple things, relatively speaking. Thin tissues like skin grafts are already being done. Cartilage patches too, where cells don't need a massive blood supply right away.
Ah, blood supply. That sounds like a catch. The sources mentioned vascular networks, blood vessels is a huge challenge.
It's the challenge for complex organs. Absolutely monumental. Think about it. If you print anything thicker than, say, a few sheets of paper,
the cells in the middle can't get oxygen or nutrients.
Exactly. They suffocate, they die within hours. You need that intricate network of capillaries, tiny blood vessels woven throughout the entire structure to keep the cells alive. Printing that level of detail, that microplumbing, is incredibly difficult.
Like building a city without roads or pipes.
Useless.
Worse, yeah, it just collapses. Which is why the second technique is often seen as more elegant. More nature-like, directed self-assembly.
Okay, self-assembly. So less printing every single cell, more coaxing them. Precisely. It's a bottom-up approach. Instead of forcing cells into place, you create the perfect little microenvironment. You provide the right cues on the scaffold, maybe chemical gradients.
Like leaving a trail of breadcrumbs for the cells.
Kind of, yeah. You set up the conditions so the cells want to organize themselves just like they do naturally during development.
And this leads to organoids, these mini organs.
Yes, tiny self-organizing structures that mimic parts of organs. They're not full organs for transplant yet, but they're already invaluable for research. Testing drugs, modeling diseases, seeing how cells interact in a 3D environment.
That sounds incredibly useful. Okay, so bioprinting self-assembly. What's the third part of the trio?
Synthetic biology. This is where we go beyond just arranging cells and start actively reprogramming their DNA.
Editing the source code?
Or even writing completely new code. Using tools like CRISPR, not just to fix genes, but to give cells entirely new functions, new apps, basically.
Like what kind of apps?
Well, programming bacteria to produce specific drugs inside the body. Or engineering yeast cells to churn out high-performance materials, like spider silk protein super strong, biodegradable. Or even biofuels, treating the cell's DNA like programmable software.
Okay, wow. So those are the tools. Let's talk applications. This is where it gets really tangible, right? Especially in medicine.
Absolutely. The potential shift in medicine is profound. Moving away from one-size-fits-all treatments towards personalized cures, literally fabricated for you, using your cells.
What's realistic in the near term?
Things like custom-printed bone grafts are getting close.
Yeah.
Imagine needing a bone repair, they scan the defect, print a scaffold perfectly matching it, seed it with your cells, and implant it. The scaffold dissolves as your own bone grows in.
Incredible. No rejection issues.
Much lower risk since it's your own cells. Mm-hmm. Or think about type 1 diabetes bioprinting clusters of pancreatic islet cells that produce insulin. Could potentially be a cure, not just management.
And you mentioned organ on a chip before. How does that fit in?
That's huge for drug development. Instead of testing a new drug on animals or large human trials first, you create a tiny microfluidic chip with, say, human liver cells or even your liver cells.
You can test the drug's effect, its toxicity, on a model of your specific biology.
Exactly. Hyper-personalized drug testing. Faster, safer, cheaper drug development. See how you react before you ever take the pill.
That alone is revolutionary. Is there a historical milestone here? Something that proves this wasn't just science fiction?
Yeah, the sources often point back to Dr. Anthony Atala's work. Back in the late 90s, his team successfully grew bladders in the lab from patient cells and implanted them.
Lab-grown bladders. Implanted.
Yep. It was a landmark. Proved that you could engineer a complex, functional human organ outside the body and have it integrate successfully. It laid the groundwork. Showed it was possible.
Okay, medicine is huge.
Yeah.
But you also mentioned sustainability. How does biofabrication help there? This idea of a biocircular economy.
Right. It's about fundamentally changing how we source and make materials. Moving away from digging, drilling, processing, towards growing them in contained, efficient ways. Sustainability by design.
Using biology's efficiency.
Precisely. Think about materials. The sources mention modern matter. They're making leather, but without the cow.
Wow.
They engineer yeast cells to produce collagen, the main protein in leather. They feed the yeast sugar in bioreactors, harvest the collagen, and process it into a material that looks and feels like leather.
Wow. So avoiding all the land use, water use, methane emissions from cattle farming?
Exactly. A much cleaner, contained process. Or look at Ecovative Design. They use mycelium, the root structure of mushrooms.
Mushroom roots? For what?
They grow it into specific shapes to make packaging materials replacing things like styrofoam, or even building materials like insulation panels. It feeds on agricultural waste, grows quickly, and is completely biodegradable.
So we're talking about replacing factories with fungal farms and bioreactors.
In some cases, yeah, that's the vision. And it extends to food, too. Cultured meat, growing meat directly from animal cells, bypassing the need to raise and slaughter animals. Huge potential environmental and ethical benefits there.
And the really far out vision, living architecture, buildings that breathe.
Well, yeah, buildings with biofabricated elements, maybe walls that contain engineered microbes or algae that can photosynthesize, purify the air, maybe even generate some energy. It's way out there. That shows the potential scope.
Okay, this is all incredibly exciting, almost utopian.
Yeah.
But there have to be challenges, right? Downsides. Ethical questions.
Oh, absolutely. And Dr. Thorne in The Sources emphasizes this heavily. The technology is moving incredibly fast, maybe faster than our ability to grapple with the implications.
What are the big red flags?
Well, several. One is the moral status question. What about those organoids, especially if they develop neural activity? Even basic brain-like structures grown in a lab.
Yeah.
What rights do they have? How do we define consciousness or personhood there? It gets philosophically deep very quickly.
Yeah, that's heavy.
Then there's equity and access. These are likely to be expensive technologies initially. Will they just widen the gap between the rich who can afford personalized organs or treatments and the poor who can't? How do we ensure fair access?
A classic problem with cutting-edge tech.
And then the need for regulation. The sources call it anticipatory governance. We need rules and ethical frameworks before these technologies become widespread. We're talking about tools that could fundamentally alter the human body, maybe even create new forms of life. We need societal discussion now.
So the message is, proceed with caution, with awareness.
Exactly. It's not just about can we do it, but should we do it, and how should we do it responsibly. The sources stress that for every scientist pushing the boundaries, we need ethicists, policymakers, citizens asking the tough questions. Why this? For whom?
It's about collaboration with nature, not just replicating it or controlling it. Responsibility is key.
That seems to be the core takeaway, yes. The power of biology, its efficiency, its adaptability, its self-assembly, it offers this incredible blueprint for future innovation. But we have to choose to use it wisely.
So recapping the big idea, the future of making things is shifting from building to growing, using life's own processes.
Yeah, that bottom-up elegance, guiding trillions of tiny cellular workers rather than just commanding materials from the top down, learning biology's logic.
It really reframes what manufacturing even means. Which leads to a final thought. If we can truly grow almost anything, from materials to organs, efficiently and sustainably, what's the first big, dirty, energy-guzzling industrial process we should just stop doing? What should we choose to grow instead? Something to think about. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ecotra Foundation.